Hey, welcome to another episode of the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast. You're in for an amazing treat. We have a bonus episode today, and I've got Carly Fiorina, an incredible business leader and executive at AT&T, the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, leader and a coach to multiple nonprofit organizations. Carly is a world-class leader. She's a cancer survivor, even a one-time United States presidential candidate. I'm excited for you to hear from her. Let's now go to the interview with Carly Fiorina.
This is the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast.
Hey, Carly, it's an amazing honor to have you with us today, and I've admired your leadership for many, many years. I've learned from your wisdom, and I've been really looking forward to learning more about you in this leadership conversation on your amazing new book. Congratulations, just out, Find Your Way, Unleash Your Power and Highest Potential. Congratulations on a fantastic, powerful book.
Well, thank you so much, Craig, and thank you for your kind comments. You are an inspiring leader as well and have accomplished so much. And it's great to reconnect via this podcast.
Well, thank you. What I love about your book, Carly, is it's both incredibly practical and down to earth, and at the same time, it's massively inspirational. And as I was reading it, I kind of felt like you were my personal leadership coach, like we've been friends for 30 years, and like we're sitting across the table and you were counseling me, giving me advice to make my leadership better, but you were doing it in a way that made me like ready to go and attack. So your writing style is so personal and again, both practical and inspirational. So I'm really excited to dive into the content and let you share that with our broader audience. And then I know they're going to want to go get the book when they're through listening to this. So let's kind of go back to the story behind the story or the story before the story. And could you tell us, Carly, a little bit about your childhood, your family, where you grew up, and include what you thought you'd do later on in life when you were starting out as a child?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for those kind words. I think so many people right now are feeling helpless and powerless and hopeless and frustrated, and none of us are. And I've learned in my own life that we all have so much more potential than we realize. And sometimes we can't unlock that potential unless something unexpected and challenging comes along. And in a way, that's the story of my own life. I had wonderful parents who taught me wonderful things. My mother said to me when I was about 8, "What you are is God's gift to you. What you make of yourself is your gift to God." And those words landed with me for a couple reasons. Number one, because I didn't feel gifted. All of my life, really, through my 20s, was about being scared and insecure. Everybody was always so much, you know, smarter, better, prettier, more prepared, you know? And so her words sort of felt like a promise to me that I had gifts. But they also were a challenge. What you make of yourself is your gift to God. And she was telling me, you have gifts, you have to find them, you have to apply them. And so when I got out of college, and while I was in college, it was sort of the plan that I was going to go to law school. And so, okay, I go off to law school. And I go off to law school with my parents' expectations weighing on me very heavily. I wasn't going to be the kid that disappointed them. My sister was rebellious. My brother was rebellious. I wasn't going to be the kid that disappointed them. I was going to go to law school and, you know, do what they thought I should do. But I got there and I hated it, really hated it. It made me physically ill almost, how much it was not the right path for me. And so one day, before the first final exam, thankfully, I really feel as though I got this message from God. I truly do, because it was this revelation, this moment of revelation where I realized this is my life and I can't live it based on other people's expectations, even my beloved parents' expectations. And so I went downstairs and I said, I quit. And at that point, they were very concerned. As you can imagine, what are you going to do? You're never going to amount to anything. You don't have a plan. And I didn't have a plan, and I had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew I had to go get a job. So I did. And I became a receptionist for a 9-person real estate firm and typed and filed and answered the phones. And what kept me going in that period was words from my dad. He had always said to me, Carly, no matter what you do, work hard, focus on excellence, do an excellent job. And so I said, okay, I don't know where I'm going. And, you know, this isn't the dream job, but I'm going to work hard and I'm going to do an excellent job. And what I learned is if you do that, opportunity knocks.
Well, you obviously did that. And it really means a lot to me personally to hear you talk about your insecurities. And I think that's what I love about your writing is you know, we know you from the headlines. You're, you know, a previous presidential candidate. You were the amazing CEO of Hewlett Packard. And so we see this massive, powerful leader, and yet you didn't see yourself that way. In fact, I think there's a quote in your book from Mary Oliver that seemed to almost move you out of a state of complacency into the ability to take risk, even though you might have felt a little insecure and unprepared for it. Can you tell us about that quote?
Yeah, so the quote from Mary Oliver is one in which she describes life, each of our lives, as a wild and precious thing. And I think it's such a beautiful way to describe the potential that each of us have in our lives. I believe that people are created on purpose and for a purpose. I also know that many people never get a chance to find or fulfill their purpose. And I know that fear or insecurity or doubt holds so many of us back from finding and fulfilling our purpose. And so that decision to drop out of law school was the first decision that I had ever made where I literally had to overcome my own fear. And the reason that was so important is because as I went on, it wasn't that I became fearless, not at all. In fact, one of the things I've learned is everybody's afraid. Everybody's afraid of something. And most of the time we're afraid of some kind of silly things. But all those kinds of fears hold us back. And so it was interesting. I was with a group of people yesterday, and this man asked me, he said, where have you found all this courage that we see you display? And I said, you know what? Courage takes practice. And until and unless we can get over our fears, we will not have that wild and precious thing that Mary Oliver calls our life. And we also will never fulfill our potential, and we won't make the kind of positive contribution that we're meant to make.
So I'm curious, as you grow in your leadership expertise and as you have success along the way, does the fear diminish or do you just get better at dealing with it?
Well, a little bit of both, honestly. Yes, the fear diminishes in the sense that the small things don't scare you anymore, but there are big things that still might scare you. For example, by the time I got to be a CEO, I wasn't afraid of people's criticism. That's a good thing because criticism is always the price of leadership. And you have to be able to withstand criticism. And you have to be able to say what other people say about me doesn't define me. What defines me is my own character, my own behavior, my own choices, my own impact. And so you get better at bigger fears. But fear is part of the human condition, and all of us have it. Courage takes practice.
I love those ideas, Carly. Courage takes practice. And then it hit me, and I can imagine some people listening right now, that you get better at bigger fears because I know, like right now, I'm facing some things that I almost said it out loud last night, but I was feeling it. I almost told my wife, I actually feel afraid that I'm not going to be able to do this. And so that speaks to me. And I think one of the things about your heart that just comes through on every word of the page is your belief in the limitless resource of human potential. Can you talk to me about that phrase and how that could inspire someone to have the courage to attempt to do more?
Think about it for a moment. Every resource in the world is limited except our potential. That's just true. And we so often overlook people's potential because of their circumstances, or because of their appearance, or because they don't agree with us, or because we don't really understand them, and so we're suspicious of them. But the truth is, all of us have God-given gifts, and all of us actually have more potential than we realize.
That's so helpful. In fact, in your book, you kind of wrote a little bit about that people can get locked up, and even everything you said just can move them past that. I think one of the biggest things that you write about, and I've experienced as well, is that our self-limiting beliefs often hold us back from living to our full potential. I think in that vein, you say that it's really more important if you're going to max out and fulfill your potential that You write about choosing path over plan. Can you unpack that idea for us, Carly?
People feel they get all these messages from the culture that says you're supposed to do things a certain way. And one of the things the culture lifts up is success means very specific things. When are you getting married? How many kids are you having? When are you graduating from college? How much money are you going to make? You know, you have to achieve this title by this point. You have to get the perfect job. You have to have all these things to prove that you're successful. And what I've seen happen over and over and over again is people get so fixated on the destination, on the plan, that they miss all these amazing opportunities all around them. And what they miss so often are the opportunities that will actually unlock them and free them to focus on the things that they're really meant to be focused on, or the things that will give them joy, or the things that will give them fulfillment. And so what this book talks about is get on a path to unlocking your potential, which involves key behaviors like courage and character and collaborating well with others and seeing possibilities. Get on a path and don't get hung up on the destination.
That's so helpful. Carly, I'm curious. A lot of CEOs, they'll talk about knowing, you know, they always wanted to be a CEO. That was a destination for them. I'm curious for you, was that something that you had in your mind when you started out, or did somehow the path lead you there? Talk a little bit about how you ended up achieving that.
Well, first of all, no, I didn't think about, oh, I'm going to be a CEO someday. In fact, so far from that. When I finally got an MBA and I finally landed in corporate America in a entry-level job, honestly, my prayer was, please let me keep this job. And so here's the thing that happened. I saw problems everywhere. And so honestly, what I did to go from secretary to CEO was not get on the plan and I'm going to be a CEO someday. No, it was there are a bunch of problems all around me. There always are. There are a bunch of people all around me, and they have a lot of potential and they have a lot of good ideas. And so we're going to get together and we're going to solve these problems and we're going to make a difference. And when you do that, you find out what you're made of. You find out what other people are made of, and results get noticed.
I think that's so helpful because it's really tempting, and you're right. Culture and social media it defines what is success, and so we end up, you know, creating goals that may end up either not delivering or take us to a place that really is under our potential. And I love, Carly, the way you write about those who are closest to the problem. And in fact, you just kind of mentioned it, that you say those that are closest to the problem are most insightful about the solution. Would you mind telling us the illustration you gave in your book about the person you supervised at AT&T that was able to solve a problem that the organization never even knew existed?
Yes. So here's an example. The person you're referring to is named Jim. He was an engineer. I didn't know anything about engineering, but he was in my very small organization. Jim was a guy who I sat down with early on in my job and said, Jim, do you see any problems? And he said, well, yeah, I design circuits. That's what he did. Jim was, by the way, talk about judging someone by their circumstances or their appearance. Jim was totally unremarkable. Everybody just sort of overlooked him. He, you know, he didn't play the game. He didn't manage up. He ate lunch at his desk every day. He was just completely unremarkable. And he said, I design circuits, and I notice that when we're billed for those circuits, the bills don't match the designs. Now, the bills weren't his job. The bills were accounting's job. And so often what happens is in big organizations, people focus on management and say things like, well, the bills aren't your job, Jim. Just do your job. But Jim saw it as a problem. And so I said, well, what do you think we ought to do? And he said, I think we ought to check. I think we ought to check the bills against my designs. So at first, he and I started checking the bills. And the more we checked, the more we found. And eventually I gave him the resources, provided the resources to him where he could supervise a whole group of people. And $300 million saved later, nobody was overlooking Jim.
I guess not. $300 million later. In fact, I think it's interesting because you dove in directly. A lot of leaders may avoid problems. I don't want to know about them. And you asked him specifically, do you have any problems? I love what you write in your book about problems. And this may shock some people, but the first thing you say is problems are an opportunity for growth. I think that's a little obvious. But you also say that problems are a signal that we're on the right path. Can you talk about that idea?
Yes. Well, first, I think you're correct that there are a lot of people who avoid problems. And I would tell you that they're not leaders. They may be managers. Doesn't make them bad people. A manager will do the best they can with the way things are. And the way things are includes some problems that have been around a long time. That's okay. Not my job. I'm just going to do the best I can within the way things are. Again, it doesn't make them bad people, but they're not leaders. Leaders change constraints and conditions. Leaders change the order of things for the better. And therefore, leaders have to focus on problem solving. That's how you change the order of things for the better. There are always problems. And so it is a key difference between leaders and managers. If the purpose of leadership is to change the order of things for the better, then they must run towards problems. But it's also true that if you want to unlock potential, if you want to achieve more, if you want someone to figure out what they're made of, they have to tackle something hard, not something easy. Jim learned so much about himself by tackling a problem. Now, Jim needed support to tackle that problem. He needed leadership to catalyze his ability to tackle that problem. But had he never tackled that problem, he'd still be sitting at his desk, unremarkable Jim, eating lunch every day, and just doing his job as a manager. And so problems, the hard stuff, not the easy stuff, the problems that have festered, that's what leaders apply their energy to, their potential to, and it's how they unlock potential in others.
Carly, I love the way you talk about that. And in fact, you told a story about a problem that you had. And I think one of the things that made me love your book even more was that you tell stories in a way that all of us can relate to everyday life. For example, sometimes when we talk about leadership, we tend to think you cast vision, you define your values, you're going to create systems, you're going to build a culture, and those things really, really matter. But sometimes leadership is dealing with a really difficult person who's sitting right next to you. How do you do that? You tell what's kind of a funny story and yet really powerful about a guy that you were paired with named Carl that put you in an incredibly awkward situation, and yet you seem to learn a lot about dealing with fear and courage. Can you tell us a little bit of that story, and what were some of the big takeaways that you got from Carl?
Well, sure. If you want to collaborate effectively with other people, you have to be willing to deal with people that you don't always agree with, or you don't always like, or that you're not always comfortable with. So Carl was a great lesson in that. So Carl was my first teammate when I joined the corporate America AT&T at that entry-level position I talked about a few minutes ago. There weren't a lot of women. And, you know, look, my resume reads medieval history and philosophy, law school dropout. Okay, she has an MBA. I mean, no one was real impressed with me. And so he didn't really like being teamed with me. So the very first meeting that I was going to have with his clients, who were now also going to become my clients, he showed up at my desk and said, "You can't come to the meeting." Why not? Well, because we're going to a strip club. And so I had to really think about that. And I remember going to the ladies' room and sitting there for literally hours saying to myself, "What am I afraid of? What am I afraid of?" Because I was terrified. Well, I was afraid because I'd never been in that situation. I was afraid of looking stupid, by the way, I did. I was afraid of so many things, but then I had to say to myself, what's worse than being afraid of going into this strip club is being knocked off my ability to do my job the very first day. So I went, and I looked stupid, and, you know, it was a very awkward several hours. I was humble enough to understand I have to work with Carl. I don't know these clients. I don't know this company. I need some of the knowledge and the relationships that he has if I'm going to do my job. But I also began to have empathy for Carl, because it turned out that Carl was afraid too. What Carl was afraid of was being kicked to the side of the road after a lifetime of a career that he was proud of. And so with that combination of humility and empathy, and Carl figured out he needed me because I would attend to the details of getting things done that he wasn't very good at. So we became good colleagues and good teammates. And the reason I tell that story is not just to illustrate that we're all afraid of things and courage takes practice and you got to overcome your fears. I also tell that story to say, look, there are bad people out there that engage in bad behavior, and that needs to be confronted. But most people aren't bad. They may be thoughtless, careless, clueless. They may be afraid of something themselves, but they're not bad. And we have to figure out how to work with all kinds of people. If we're going to solve problems, and we're going to unlock our own potential, and we're going to change the order of things for the better. So humility and empathy are important if you're going to collaborate with people.
I thought that story was really interesting, because there are so many different ways that you could have responded to that. And I think a lot of people would have been angry, would have disconnected, would have recognized he was kind of having a power play against you or whatever. But you seemed to engage with him in a way that built respect and trust. Can you tell us, what did you learn in your kind of own discovery about your ability to still have relational power when someone else might have been leveraging up against you?
Well, I'll tell you another story to illustrate this, perhaps. I had a boss who was introducing me to my new subordinates and who introduced me with the line, "This is Carly, your new boss. She's our token bimbo." That was another attempt at diminishment and dismissal. And in that case, I didn't confront him publicly, but I went into his office after the fact and shut the door and said, "You will never speak to me that way again." There are times when confrontation is required, and an honest conversation, not an angry conversation, not a judgmental conversation, but an honest conversation is required. "You will never do that to me again." There are other times when you make your point. I went to the strip club, and then you settle down and figure out how to work with someone. I couldn't rely on position or title to demand respect from people. I didn't have a position or a title. What I had to rely on was my own capacity and the capacity of others. And what I had to figure out was, how do I work with other people to produce results by changing the order of things for the better? And that was a huge blessing.
I like the way you contextualized the extremes of both those stories. You had two examples of people that were incredibly disrespectful and dishonoring. And one guy with Carl, you stepped into his world and you ended up having empathy for him. And then another person, when they were really on a line in a public way, you realized that took an entirely different approach. And so when I look at your leadership from a distance and try to determine, you know, what are the big contributing factors that brought you to such a high level of impact, I see so many, and reading your book gives me more insight, and I could list, you know, 15 or 20 things that rise to the top immediately. I think, though, when I look at it, one of the things that really stands out above anything else is that you are principled in your leadership, always trying to do the right thing. And I think that your idea of path over plan helps illustrate this. You're going to do the right thing. You're going to take the next right step. I'd love for you to bring some commentary around the whole idea of when you were running for president and you became clear that you didn't have a good path to presidency. Can you talk about that realization and how choosing path over plan, doing the right thing, how it helped you right-size that circumstance?
I knew when I ran that it was a very long shot. It was a long shot because people didn't know who I was. I mean, the Leadership Summit audience may know who I was, but most people didn't. I was an outsider. I didn't have infrastructure, so I knew it was a long shot. I don't mind challenge, as perhaps you've picked up on. I kind of like it. But at a certain point, it became clear there was no way to win. And continuing on a plan just because a destination beckons isn't helpful. It wouldn't have been helpful to voters. It wouldn't have been helpful to the process, and it wouldn't have been helpful to me. And so when it became clear that the long shot has become impossible, it was time to step aside. And so people remark on that decision, wow, that must have been so difficult. But honestly, it wasn't very difficult for me. It was very obvious to me that this was the right next decision to make, to the point of not getting hung up on the plan and the destination. I was prepared to win the presidency and do the job, but I was always prepared to lose and to do something else to make a difference. And so I think when you are prepared for all kinds of outcomes, when you're open to all kinds of destinations, but what you're focused on is, I will behave with courage and character and humility and empathy and collaborate with others and see possibilities all around me. When you focus your energies on that path, instead of getting hung up on a specific destination, the right choices are easier, not harder.
So helpful. I want to make sure, Carly, that our leaders know the name of your book is Find Your Way, Unleash Your Power and Highest Potential. And I want to thank you for the years of sacrifice and faithfulness and the price you paid to get to where you got, and then to take the time to sit down and to write a book that is so personal, so inspirational, so practical. It's been a real honor just to get to know the leader behind the headlines. And I'd love to kind of close out with giving you the chance to offer a final encouragement to our listeners. And maybe you can answer this for us. If leaders could do one thing today to find their path in life, I want to be on a path. I'm not trying to follow a plan, but I want to be on the right path to live out their wild and precious life, as you quoted in the book. What would you say would be the very first step we do to get on that path to fulfill the potential that's put inside of us?
Find a problem that's close to you and that you care about. Don't pick an abstract problem. Find a problem that's close to you and that impacts you. And think about why you care about that problem. And then begin to gather others who care about that problem. And that's the kind of practical advice. I give some practical advice about how to find the right problem. And then when you get afraid, when you come up with all the reasons why you shouldn't do it, you couldn't do it, no one will understand, you'll get criticized, then take a big pause and ask yourself the basic question, what am I afraid of? What's the worst that can happen? But in the end, honestly, success, a successful life, is not defined by the destination you achieve. It's defined by love and moments of grace and positive contribution. And I've considered my life, despite its setbacks and its travails and its troubles, and those are part of every life, I consider my life a great blessing and a life filled with joy. Solving problems can bring joy in addition to unlocking your own potential.
I love that so much. I try to tell myself this: success isn't something that you accomplish in the future. Success is being obedient and faithful today. And that kind of idea just runs through everything that you write. And so to everyone listening right now, I hope that you hear the heart and the passion behind Carly's words, that find a problem. There's something nearby that you care about that's not right, and leaders tend to make things wrong right, and that could be your next assignment. The book is called Find Your Way, Unleash Your Power of the Highest Potential. Go out and get it right now. And Carly, it's been amazing to have you at the Global Leadership Summit in the past. I'm excited about the Global Leadership Summit this year. I have the honor of serving again. I've got a new idea that we're going to talk about, and we've got an amazing faculty. So I know we've got leaders all over the world that still have time to be a part of one of the Global Leadership Summit sites. Carly, thank you for your amazing book. Thank you for your example. Thank you for your heart, your passion, and thank you for writing a book that was just like you're my leadership coach. Thank you for being my mentor through your book and all that you've done. It's been an honor to spend some time with you.
Well, thank you so much, Craig. This has been a very wonderful conversation for me as well.
Thanks, Carly. If you're new with us, we come out with a brand new leadership teaching on the first Thursday of every single month. So I look forward to sharing that with you next time. If this podcast is helpful to you, it means the world to me when you share on social media. Thank you for doing that. Please rate it, review it, get the word out. I can't wait to share more with you. We always say this, be yourself as a leader. Have confidence in what is inside of you, because people would rather follow a leader who's always real than one who's always right.
Thank you for joining us at the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast. If you want to go even deeper into this episode and get the leadership guide or show notes, you can go to life.church/leadership podcast. You can also sign up to have that information delivered straight to your inbox every month. In the meantime, you can subscribe to this podcast, rate and review it on iTunes, and share with your friends on social media. Once again, thank you for joining us at the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast.